Welcome to El Talon John's La Liga Weekly. So Atletico are now 10 points clear, thanks to Luis Suarez, Koke, Saul Oblak, and of course, Eder Militao. Well played this weekend, son. I mean, really well done. The Brazilian did more for Sergio Ramos's contract talks than a month of news stories linking him with Manchester United. He was sent off 8 minutes into the game against Levante, but luckily it's Real Madrid, the biggest football club in the world. They're bound to have a bench packed full of players such as... never heard of him. Anyway, they lost, so Barca have gone sort of second. The same record as Madrid, but with a better goal difference. Not the goal difference matters at the end of the season. Is all that clear? Was that all that in Messi's mind when he went through on goal late on in the victory over Athletic? Listen, I don't get paid half a billion euros to pass to the likes of Martin Brathwaite, thank you very much, even if he is 8 yards out and unmarked. We should note, of course, that Messi's reported €555 million euro contract was paid over 4 years, and as yet he hasn't had the €14 million due for when they win the Champions League. No wonder he was so furious with Dembele back at Anfield. He's also charged Barca a £97 million renewal premium. In that respect, he's a bit like an insurance company. And in the respect that if you crash your car, he'll shrug his shoulders and say, "Don't do it me, mate. I can't help you." Elsewhere, I was shocked, and I tell you, shocked, that Villarreal versus Real Sociedad finished as a draw, despite a wonder goal from Dani Parejo. The player of the week was surely Rafa Mir of Huesca. A Premier League team in need of a big centre-forward should have a good look at him. You know, someone like, I don't know, Wolves. If you don't know, by the way, he's on loan. Yeah. And they've just gone and paid a loan fee and got Julian Jose in and Rafa Mir. Anyway, thank you to all the patrons. Sorry to the podcasters that we are a day late. Well done for having a look if you did join and join the free Patreon for 24 hours. We couldn't get it uploaded on the Monday. I've got a little note on Twitter, Terry, from remember there was a football commentator called Rob Palmer. I don't know if you remember having a poke at me about paywalls. And this is a man who owns a yacht because he spent 57 years working at Sky, by the way, complaining about paywalls for your best project. He had a reasonable point because I'd been on saying that I hadn't bothered reading an article in the Telegraph because I don't want to pay for it, but. The Telegraph is owned by billionaires. This is just us. So thank you to everybody who's put your hand in your pocket. patreon.com/LL. Thank you very much. So where do we start? I've got to start with Real Madrid, Terry, haven't we? I think they what a mess they made of what should have been a regulation home game against Levante. There were other things wrong, but obviously the pivotal moment was Eder Militao getting himself sent off 8 minutes into the game.
Yeah, that is obviously so early in the game. It is a disadvantage, of course it is. But I was disappointed with the reaction of Real Madrid. Initially, it was okay. It was pretty decent. I mean, you have to take into account as well, would I rather have had the 10 Real Madrid players than the 11 Levante players? Yeah, probably would still.
Yeah.
You know, Casemiro went back to centre-half. You've still got Modric and Toni Kroos in midfield. Up against the Levante midfield. Levante were playing a 4-4-2. So it's a mental thing, you know. It's in terms of you can take, look at it both ways. If you're a Real Madrid player during that period where you've just been hampered by when a man sent off, it was questionable, the decision. I'm not massively against the red card, but I could have seen a way how you could have adjudged that, you know, the particularly Rafael Varane, had a chance of, you know, Sergio Leon wasn't getting away from them, was he? His pace wasn't getting him completely away. So I think there would have been a further challenge from Varane before Leon gets his shot away.
Yeah, he wasn't fully in control of the ball, was he? Because he cut across, he still had another step to take, didn't he, before he could have hit the ball. And he had Odriozola and Varane coming back, who are both lightning fast, aren't they? So it's a 50-51, I think, isn't it?
Like I think so.
I don't think it's a scandal.
No, I think the letter of the law, he actually was the last defender, wasn't he? But with two close to him, very close as well. We're not talking 10 yards away, we have a possibility, very close. So I think it was questionable, but to the letter of the law, he was effectively the last defender. And that went against Real Madrid. Then we're going to talk about a Levante win. I thought Levante were really poor.
Yeah.
I thought they could have controlled the game far better than they did. I thought they were too flippant in terms of their possession. Their possession play wasn't good. It wasn't accurate. It was... Real Madrid were almost They drop, of course, when you go down to 10 men that early in the game, you're going to drop deeper and you're not, you know, you're going to be one man short somewhere. So players have to work hard. Then the manager has a responsibility to freshen the team up where he feels it needs freshening up, which didn't happen until too late, probably, from Real Madrid's point of view. But you mentioned at the start the lack of bodies on the box. We saw the howls of protest, which was quite interesting, wasn't it, when the penalty was given to Levante.
Yeah.
Where the referee was being heckled by the non-playing members.
Yes, particularly Sergio Ramos.
Led by Sergio Ramos. Yeah. And it was almost like they had proof. They'd seen it. And when you see the replay, I couldn't tell after countless replays whether it was on the line outside.
Vinicius literally just come on. Because I was wondering, whether I was going to ask you whether they should have made some kind of tactical change, because they didn't, did they? As you say,
nope.
Casemiro dropped in, but that was it. And then, what, an hour gone, they put Vinicius on. And literally, I think it's literally the first thing he does, isn't he? Literally, yes. Goes herring.
Second. He was on seconds.
Yeah, and clatters. And it's right, and it's almost above the line. So it's another one where you could have given it either way, isn't it? Because you could have read that as being outside the box, couldn't you? Or you could say, well, it's over the box. Because the line isn't, the rule isn't clear, is it? In a football line is what that is, that, isn't it? And the human body is that. So there's always room for a bit of interpretation, isn't there? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, it's Carlos Clerc who gets there first, gets the touch, it's clear foul.
Yeah.
A silly challenge and reckless in the fact it was even so close to the penalty area. It was one of a young player who's frustrated he's not playing and wants to go on with loads of enthusiasm and show the manager that, you know, the manager's watching on television, show the manager, you know, that he's up for the fight, up for the challenge and wants to impress. But it was naive to make that challenge. Great save from Courtois. Mm-hmm. And Courtois played well. He kept his team in the game with a number of really good saves. Fantastic goal from Morales to equalise Asensio's goal that put them 1-0 up. And it was Levante, I thought, would struggle to actually control the game against the Real Madrid team, whose attitude and lethargy in the second half in particular, that I thought they were running out of steam. But I don't put down the fact they had 10 men as a massive excuse. So it's one of those performances where you try to identify who's played well. No one particularly. There was mistakes all over the place. Courtois was the obvious outstanding performer. And, you know, the likes of Benzema went missing. Modric was good in the first half and Kroos, but they faded in the second half. And again, it was one of those performances from Real Madrid which we're seeing too frequently this season. So, yeah, they can have an excuse to a degree that they were down to 10 men so early in the game. But a team still full of world-class players, but Hazard in particular was another disappointing performance again. So they've lost their way in the league, that's for sure. And we keep getting these. Just when you think everything's going all right, when Benzema is firing on all cylinders, the midfield looks dynamic. The result against Alaves the week before, they're getting all the plaudits. And then on the back of that, they come into the game at home against Levante where they should be getting beat, even with 10 men that early in the game. And Levante, for most of the game, looked content to hang on for a draw. But once they realised that Real Madrid were there for the beating, they were able to take it with another fine goal from Roger Marti, who atoned for his penalty miss. Great save by Courtois.
We should mention the goal. I know it's in defeat, but Asensio's goal, controversial and brilliant at the same time, wasn't it? In that there's the incident with Mendy in the Real Madrid penalty area, and then they immediately break forward, and Toni Kroos plays a fabulous pass, isn't it? Beautifully judged into the path of Asensio, who then races away, finishes it really well. So I think we're giving credit there. Should it have been a goal? Should they have gone back?
I thought it was a penalty at the other end. I really do. I think it's Mundy with Gonzalo Melero, and it's a foul. It's a painful blow as well. It's an elbow. I don't think it's intentional from Mundy, but it is one. Often you see players go down holding their face, writhing around in agony. When you see the replay, you think, come on, there was nothing there. But that was, you know, it caught him with his arm, his elbow. Pretty plumb, to be honest. So I was surprised that it didn't go back. But when I say I'm surprised, I think all hell would have broken loose.
A brave decision, isn't it?
The goal had been disallowed and then a penalty at the other end. I think it would have been bad enough if the goal had been disallowed. But then to go nope, you're not 1-0 up. Actually, Llorente have got a penalty at the other end. That's a massive call. But I thought it was a foul. Genuinely thought it was a foul. Great pass from Kroos. Simon Modric loved those outside of the foot passes. And at that stage, you know, Real Madrid 1-0 up. I know they've got 10 men, but you still thought they should have had enough, you know, their back four in place and some quality in midfield. Benzema might have had to play out a lone thrower up front. But at no stage did they ever look like a team that thought they had a plan. Mm. And eventually they just, Levante realised they were there for the taking and got all 3 points.
Right, Atletico then obviously took advantage. They're 10 points clear now, Terry. It's quite significant, isn't it? If it was either Real Madrid or Barcelona, 10 points clear, with this, you know, with 50 points at the halfway stage of a season, we'd be saying, wow, this is done now. There's no competition left here. Because it's Atleti, because they're being chased by Real Madrid and Barcelona, I think collectively we're all a bit nervous of saying that, you know, they're going to march to the title, to the title yet. But, you know, they managed to see off Carithu, as we know, an awkward team to play against, aren't they? And a good game. And not for the first time in recent weeks, Luis Suarez, top scorer in La Liga, was absolutely crucial.
All those years of Suarez being like a caddy for Messi. Whenever there was a free kick, I used to make a joke of it. He's only telling Messi what club to take, you know, where to put it. He was always there for advice. He might have once or twice said, any chance of, you know, me taking this one? But it never happened. And he showed at the weekend that he can take a smashing free kick. Yeah. I mean, his efficiency in front of goal is ridiculous. I think somewhere at the 20 attempts at goal, and there he is with 13 goals this season. The distance he covers isn't particularly great. When he got substituted, I think it was 8 kilometres. It was nothing, you know, extraordinary, and most of that isn't at high speed. But, God, he's proving to be such a decisive player. I mean, you've got that efficiency that they've not had in the past, and he is one of the reasons that Atletico are phenomenal. They've formed 8 straight wins in the league. Mm. They've only lost one league game all season against Real Madrid. Simeone be desperately disappointed with a defensive performance in this game, I would imagine. Knowing that Negredo is the main source of goals for Cadiz, you know, to allow him a couple of attempts on goal. I always say about Atletico Madrid, try to keep the ball out of the box as much as they can, let alone allow teams to have attempts on goal. That's what happened in this game. Cadiz played their part in a really, really entertaining game. A little bit more entertaining than you would expect from those two, to be perfectly honest. So that there were 6 goals. Cadiz at 3-2 when Negredo gets his second back in the game. But it was kind of a classic Atletico performance, but allowing Cadiz to score twice. So they construct, play well, a little bit slowly at times. They rely on Suarez, João Felix, nothing wrong with that at all. But it was pleasing to see Koke amongst the goals.
Yeah, go on then, tell us about Koke.
Yeah, I think he's one of those players. I'm not even sure. We've been doing the podcast a long time. I'm never sure we've highlighted Koke. And I was watching the game. He was rather fortunate with the penalty decision that went against him and then was changed on VAR. Again, that's open to interpretation. He clearly didn't mean it, that he was falling to the ground. His arm went down on the ground. The ball did strike his arm. It looks a clear handball. But according to the laws of the game, rightly, I think, it wasn't given. And this season in particular, he's been just quietly outstanding. Do you know, he's there every week. He's consistent. He's 29 now. He's almost approaching 500 games for Atletico Madrid. Won the league title, a couple of Europa Leagues, runners-up twice in the Champions League, a Copa del Rey in 2013. And he's changed his game has changed along the way. So if Atletico were to win another league title, and he would be captain, and he plays the part that he's played so far in this season, he has to go down as one of the legends of all time at Atletico Madrid. And I don't think don't think any Atletico Madrid supporters appreciate that. Mm. And in time, because he's a player that's not always been at this level. I think that the last couple of seasons prior to this one, I don't think he was at the level he's at now, but constantly playing in central midfield. And he's become a leader of a very, very good and efficient football team. And I thought it was just quite right that I point out the attributes that he has, that he brings to the team. wonderful career so far, still plenty left in the tank, and he epitomises what his manager is all about. And it's pleasing to see him get the goal. And not surprising, because the way he's altered his game this year, if the chance is there to break forward, I was surprised when it was squared and it was him on the end of it, tapping it in from close range, that, you know, he's prepared to keep working hard right up to the last minutes of the game to make sure that Atletico Madrid are successful. So he's a great player for Simeone to have in his ranks and to lead the squad.
Let's crack on with Barcelona then, shall we? So you've already mentioned one great free kick goal. So Messi, just showing that they are both quite good at those free kicks, you know. He didn't bang one in, did he? It was interesting because they tried to put a Athletic tried to put a man back on the line. Was it Yeray who tried to get
tried everything?
Yeah. So they had a man kneeling down behind the wall. I'm not convinced about this man behind the wall now in every single
free kick. I've only ever seen someone get injured. Never seen anyone block it. There was one the other week where they all jumped up and trod back and trod on him.
Yeah.
I think it was a Valencia player. I think it might have been Gaia, might have been laying on the floor.
Yeah.
And they all jumped up and turned their back and someone landed on him.
And we have seen Messi scored. It was Granada, wasn't it, who had a guy on the ground. And he still scored. Still just put it around him. He can't do anything because he's lying down.
I would not have volunteered. I wouldn't have done it anyway because I'm 5'4", so I wouldn't have stretched that far behind the wall. Yeah. It would have been far too easy. But you need someone longer. but I'm not convinced that. I've never seen it work. I've never seen a wall jump and it hit the player on the who's laying on the floor.
I guess the notion is that it stops them going low, so you can jump as high as you like in the wall, but and have a man
relatively safe in the knowledge that you've got a sandbag on the floor that's going to block it.
But it was like it was a once a season thing that someone scored like that way, wasn't it? I think.
But it was a great free kick. They tried everything. The player behind the ball laying on the floor. And Yeray, interestingly, he didn't go there at least because he didn't want to play everyone on side and allow people to get around the goalkeeper. So he tried in vain to get back to help Unai Simon. And it was inch perfect from Messi. Mm. So it was a good opening, you know, to the game. And I thought from then on, Barcelona controlled it. It was a little bit of a surprise. The Athletic got the equaliser. It was an own goal from Jordi Alba, but then from then on, Athletic played well.
Yeah, yeah.
You see the massive improvement.
Yeah, all right, aren't they? Yeah. Well, we should mention they won 5-1 on Monday, didn't they? After we last did the podcast, they thrashed but Getafe. So they are looking lively. Look, is that a good way of putting it? Lively, I think, under Marcelino.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And they played a basic system, 4-4-2, two players up front, Raúl García, Iñaki Williams. He's not changing the team as much as Garitano did in the past, and the players are, you know, enjoying the simplicity, basic setup, simplicity in terms of the tactical setup, and they've got good players, Athletic Club. That's why I said that I could understand that the change of management and Marcelino is having a fantastic impact. And from then on, after they equalised, that game was up, it was in the balance, it was 50-50. You know, Athletic went there with a game plan and went behind, showed the character to come back. But then Barcelona equally showed good character and scored the winner from Griezmann. And Griezmann is doing all right now, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's doing okay. You know, he's avoiding those disastrous incidents, disastrous matches, and he's maintaining a decent level of performance now, scoring goals as well. And the kind of elephant in the room is regarding the cost sort of drifting away into the background now. So, you know, long that may that continue for Barcelona's perspective, that hard-fought game. They're not a brilliant team, Barcelona, but I think with the young players, you know, Pedri played well again. De Jong is really impressive. Yeah. He's wherever you pass, whatever role you ask him to play, he's stepping up to the plate. And Araujo is, you know, game by game, he's rapidly becoming a valuable asset to Barcelona in terms of just filling in for Piqué. Now it's not a question of, you know, he's only going to play when Piqué's injured or Longley or Umtiti. It's, you know, he's in the mix to be, you know, for a regular starting place in the starting 11. So the younger players are doing particularly well. Mingueza is another one as well, you know.
I'm still not convinced he's a right back, but but he did set up the goal, didn't he? As an attacking right back in a sort of Dest kind of way.
Yeah, he looks a good, skillful centre back, doesn't he?
Yeah,
He's you know, he's good on the ball. He looks as you'd expect of a player that's been brought up in the youth system at Barcelona. He's comfortable in possession and all that. He's got decent pace. And above all else, I think he seems to have a really tidy attitude, so that nothing fazes him. And if the manager asks him to do a job, he'll do that to the best of his ability. So I think he could be a really good squad member in years to come. And I hear that he was nowhere near the first team.
Right.
Until Koeman came in. I hear that from Albert Ferrer that he wasn't even playing regularly in the B team. And for some reason, the manager comes in. Just goes to show, doesn't it? When a new manager comes in and takes a fresh look at it, he can pick out players that suit his, you know, what he's looking for in particular positions. Maybe he looks and sees the player's attitudes, you know, smacks him in the face and thinks, I'll give this youngster a chance. And he's grabbed it. Great example of a youngster grabbing his opportunity with both hands, same as Araujo and Pedri. So it's things are going all right for Barcelona at the moment. I think they just about deserve that win. And I don't want to be too critical because on one hand, I'm saying Athletic have got good players, good manager and a good team. So it was a hard-fought encounter and Barcelona just about shaded it.
Yes. Were you so El Mundo, the Spanish newspaper, revealed Messi's contract details. Who gave them to the newspaper? We just don't know, do we? There's obviously lots of people speculating. The league president came out on Messi's side and all of that, but no one's denied the numbers involved. They obviously are annoyed that they've revealed exactly how much he's getting paid. Doesn't really change anything, does it? I think we've already discussed Messi's staggering wages. But as I wrote in an article for Football España, if you want to dig it out, everybody, he generates more money than anybody else, doesn't he? Yeah. He has a unique generating power. He has a unique appeal in that I know football's an 11, you need 11 players out there to play football, but in terms of your marketing, one or two individuals is what it's all about. So he's worth that much money until the point comes where the club literally is going out of business because they can't afford to staff because of other mistakes they've made. But the truth is that they're looking down the barrel now, aren't they, in terms of their financial position. So it's interesting times as to whether what anyone can pay Messi now for the next period, where he ends up after the summer.
And there aren't many others that can pay the money that Messi's going to demand anyway.
Mm.
So I think City, PSG, Barcelona are the only three.
Yeah.
And, you know, it depends on his thought process on whether he wants to end his career as a one-club player before going off and playing one of the other leagues around the world where he'll be highly paid again, but not at the forefront of, you know, football week in, week out. Or whether he, you know, wants to go and play for a team that he thinks has a better chance. I don't think he'll ever get paid the money that he has been paid.
I don't think you can with FFP. I don't think there is a club exactly with that revenue that, because it's built in now to Barcelona, isn't it? Because they started it in 2017. They're the only club with a structure able to pay him that, but then they are not able to, you know, talk about signing Eric Garcia and they can't afford him.
Yeah.
So that's...
I think it's not... What I hope is that Messi makes the next choice and it's not built around money.
Mm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, he's never going to be short of a few, Bob. I think he's been worth every euro that he's been paid by Barcelona. So money, I mean, the bloke, he's not. He could live 20 lives and not be able to spend the money he's earned and deserved. I'm not critical of that. And I agree with you. When I go out to do La Liga TV on a Friday, I would say there's at least 20 people on that plane going to watch Barcelona on the Saturday. And I always get asked, is Messi playing?
Yeah.
My son's been half a dozen times flown out from London to go and watch Barcelona play over the years. And every time, thankfully, Messi's playing.
Mm.
It would be a disaster if you booked up the flight, you got out there and Messi was rested. Yeah. So he's a tourist attraction. And can you imagine that? That's just one flight going out from EasyJet. There's flights from all over the world, all over Europe. People go in to watch Lionel Messi, to buy the Messi merchandise, you know, to say they've seen him in the flesh. He has deserved the money. I mean, he's the best player in the world, possibly the best player that's ever played the game. And he's contributed 650th goal. We forgot to mention that, was it, for Barcelona?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's just, you know, we know the numbers from him and Ronaldo. They're just scandalous numbers. So I don't begrudge him any of the money that he's earned. I just hope this next choice is made on, you know, what he wants to do with his career, as opposed to, right, who's paying me the most money? That's where I'll end up. I don't think that will be the case with Messi. I think he'll make his decision based on the right principles. Now, whether that's a sporting challenge and he thinks he's got a better chance elsewhere, maybe. And also, I actually don't think this incident will influence his decision, because it's quite clear it's been made public by someone with an axe to grind against Barcelona. I doubt it's one of the future candidates to be president. So to be a new broom and sweep the place through, this is part of the, I'm not saying it's the old regime that have done it, but it's the new president, you know, can clear all that up. So I don't think Messi would take it out on Barcelona. I think there's going to be a witch hunt, though, to find out who did it. Even Koeman said.
Right, okay.
Private. It's private. You know, private confidential documents. Whoever's done it needs to be out of the club as soon as possible.
Yeah, so, we'll see. I'm never convinced.
They'll find out.
Less than an email trail. You send it from your work email, but I don't think that's, you know, not sure that's happened, is it? Right, let's crack on. Let's do Villarreal versus Real Sociedad. As I say, Terry, it's a shock result that this was a draw, this one, because it's three in a row for Villarreal. They've won 8 games. They've drawn 11 games this season, only lost 2. So how do you want to draw your stats up? Do you want to say Unai Emery's on a great run of unbeaten games? Real Sociedad. So what is it? 3 points from 4 games, 1 win in 11 in La Liga, which was the derby, 2 in 17. So they're both teams in similar positions, aren't they? Parejo scored a brilliant goal early on, and then they led for about 90 minutes, didn't they, until Isak's equaliser.
Yeah, and Real Sociedad deserved to win this game, let alone deserve the late draw. Isak played really well. They had more shots, more possession. They were dominant. It was just the Parejo's goal in the 3rd minute. Gave Villarreal something to hang on to. Several players missing through injury, which doesn't help. Real Sociedad, both teams played all right. Real Sociedad, though, were really good. Really good. Isak was really good. So the draw was merited at the very least, but slightly surprising. It's not, you know, because of the absences that Unai Emery has got at the moment, they weren't able to play their possession game. So therefore they conceded possession, plus the nature of the game when you go ahead early on and you're playing against a direct rival in terms of Villarreal 5th, Real Sociedad 6th, means you look a bit more cautious. And Unai Emery is guilty of that, quite a lot. So Real Sociedad had nothing to do but go for it and probably should have won the game. So I think Villarreal at the end of it, on reflection, will be, you know, they'd be disappointed they've conceded the 93rd minute from Isak, but it could easily have been a win for Real Sociedad. So both teams just suffering a little bit at the moment.
Will Willian Jose go back to Real Sociedad, or is that him done?
I think it's him done, because they've bought Carlos Fernandez. So Alcacer actually put him on the end because they were so dominant and they went with 2 up front and it paid off. You know, balls bubbling around in the box, Carlos Fernandez, a couple of challenges, and Isak thrashed it home from close range. So I like the signing of Carlos Fernandez. I think the age bracket, he fits in nicely. He enhances that sort of model of a young group. I think because they bought him, they'll be hoping that William Jose permanent transfer does go through. I think the Real Sociedad are the type of club that would buy another player.
To have a spare.
They're not going to have 3 strikers. So I'd be surprised if he comes back, of course, depending on how he does at Wolverhampton Wanderers.
So let's talk, while we're on, we might as well talk about Rafa Mir then at the same time, mightn't we? Because, that was a brilliant hat-trick, wasn't it, that he scored for Huesca. So they won, Huesca, who were bottom still are, won 3-1 at Valladolid. So a huge result, because that's two teams, directly battling for survival this season. And it's really, really closed altogether now, hasn't it? Huesca winning that game. They're looking lively as well, aren't they? New coach, new attitude. But tell us, so how good is Rafa Mir? He's on loan from Wolves, as I said.
Yeah. He's one of those players on my scouting missions that I was doing. There was a pleasant surprise. I mean, he scored goals last year in the second division, and I just feel the attributes are there for someone like Huesca. That I was getting frustrated watching it. They didn't get enough crosses into the box. I think he is a genuine strength in terms of aerial ability. He's strong. His hold-up play is good. And he's got, for a player in that manner, he's got really good pace. So I always just thought it was a case of, A, getting a partner alongside him, because I think he's the type of striker that thrives on knocking things down and flicking things on and, you know, being a nuisance as pinning central defenders. So someone with good goal-scoring attributes could play off of him. Okazaki was at the weekend. They've got Sandro Ramirez as well. So those are the options were there. I just didn't think the previous manager played to his strengths. He started the season off playing wide on the right with Okazaki up the middle. And I believe that's what they did in the second division. So when crosses were coming from the opposite flank, he was attacking the far post against smaller players. But I always thought that's a slight waste. That's ideal if you've got another big one in the middle and you've got the luxury of a big, strong winger that can attack the ball at the far post. But primarily, you want your big centre forward to be playing in the middle. And I didn't think they got enough crosses into him. Now, they're getting him the service. So I think he's a weird one because obviously he belongs to Wolves. He's had other loan spells, I think particularly one at Nottingham Forest, which didn't go well and he barely played. So if you're mentioning his name to clubs in England, they'd probably look at his previous record at Wolves. And, you know, he was a young player at Valencia to start with. Wolves took him. I knew about him. I thought he was a good signing from Wolves. Not played there much. Didn't play much at Nottingham Forest. Went on loan to a second division club. Did okay. And now I think he's got the talent. He's 23, 24, still relatively young. Certainly inexperienced in terms of top flight football. So, I mean, his goals were terrific, all three.
Yeah.
I mean, the one he took early was a player that's full of confidence, that knows it's one of those nights, and he didn't even think about it, that he took it early and wrapped his foot around it from as he was running away from goal, and, you know, found cracking shot towards the far post. Now, I think if they play to his strengths, they're 4 points away from safety now, I think. So he'll give them a chance, and they've got a fighting chance. The new manager has made an impact. Second win of the season, his first win, obviously, and a big win against Valladolid.
Right, Sevilla won 2-1 away to Eibar. Excuse me, Ocampos with a penalty, Jordan with the other one, and Brian Hill was playing against his parent club, which is always good to see. If nothing else, I think it's mean spirited and against the spirit of the game when they're not allowed to play against the parent club when they're on loan. How did he do?
First half did really well. Second half faded a little bit from the game, particularly after Sevilla got the second for Jordan and the game went away from Eibar, who looked slightly dispirited. Sevilla were efficient, tidy. They did all the right things. They're hard to break down. They knew they were in for tough game at Eibar, so their attitude was good. And it was a solid performance from Sevilla, and it needed to be against Eibar. Brian Hill, it's an interesting one, isn't it? It was good to see the reaction with Lopetegui and him after the game. There's some great footage, and it looked like a manager that can't wait to work with him next season. You know, his arm was wrapped around him. So in some respects, it's quite awkward for that young player, isn't it? You want to do well because you want to impress your manager. But at the same time, you don't think
don't punch
no,
anybody.
No, not so much that. You might be there. I'm hoping, and I'm sure he will be at Sevilla next season.
Yeah.
What if he scored the winner at the weekend, and that win costs Sevilla a Champions League place?
Yeah.
And he goes back there, and he's thinking, "What did I do? You know, I wanted to do well. I wanted to play well. I wanted to impress the manager. Impress my." He really gave Navas a tough game in the first half. But once Sevilla got on top and Navas went off injured and it became, you know, harder for Eibar and for him to shine. Alejandro Pozzo is another young player on loan at Eibar from Sevilla. And they both did all right. They're both doing well. But Lopetegui, seeing him at the end of the game, arms wrapped around him, and it was, you could see there was enthusiasm from Lopetegui. He said the right things before the game as well, and he's playing that well that it's an obvious choice for Sevilla to bring him back next season. And when he does, hopefully he plays on a pretty regular basis. Not going to be easy because they're a talented squad, but he is should be an asset for Sevilla in the future.
Right. We, for podcast purposes, Terry, we need to pause for a quick and break, but make sure you come back because we have loads of goals left to talk about. Welcome back from your ad break, everybody. hope you enjoyed it. Right, and so all we're left with that wasn't a straightforward lie. That was a satirical comment, by the way. You've got to know the difference between the two. Right, we're not going to spend an awful lot of, I propose, Terry, we're not going to spend a lot of time on Getafe 0, Alaves 0, and Granada 0, Celta Vigo 0.
No, there is one. A Go couple on. Of aspects here. That yeah. change in style from Getafe is worrying. They're toiling a bit at the bottom, you know, towards yeah. the position in the league table. They're not as effective as they has been. There's a clear change of policy from Bordalas, bringing Elenia and Taki Kubo. I'd give it another 2 weeks if they're not winning. I promise you, we'll be back to playing fullbacks on both sides of the midfield. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I think he's searching for a formula to make them improve again this season. And the other one, Granada Celta Vigo, I think it was a debut for a 21-year-old Scot. Jordan oh, right. Holsgrove right. came off yep. the bench for Celta Vigo. He's the son of Paul, who used to play in English football, and he's his dad's brother, Lee. I used to coach at Wycombe Wanderers,
oh, right.
Lee okay. Holsgrove.
Yeah.
So somehow he's found his way from Reading out to Celta Vigo, playing in the B team, and come off the bench at the weekend to face Granada. So we're getting a few of these now, aren't we? There's, you know, players, particularly some in some cases, where they've turned up, where their families moved out to Spain when they were younger and they've, you know, made their way through different grades of Spanish football, and then we see them playing in the top flight. So that was pleasing to see. Jordan Holsgrove, 21-year-old Scot. So
yeah.
getting involved with Celta Vigo.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye. Right, so that's one more game that we've got to do because Betis play Osasuna tonight. You can see the league table there if you are watching us. Betis are eighth, so they can jump into the European places if they beat Osasuna tonight. Osasuna hovering above the drop zone, so they could technically, obviously, go if they lose, drop into the bottom three. But we'll see. So one more. Oh, yeah, Valencia beat Elche by yeah. a goal to nil. So vast, really good header, actually, wasn't it? And then a failure to score from the spot for Soler, the previous penalty king, but actually a decent result for Valencia. And important, there are only 4 points above the drop zone still. So hugely important that they win this kind of game.
Well, it is. I mean, you see Alaves picking up a point, Huesca getting the win, Osasuna in pretty decent form at the moment. So it was a good header from Vaz, great run from Guedes. And, you know, I look at Valencia's team, it's still not bad. There's not a lot below the starting 11. If they get one or two injuries, they're suffering. Javi Gracia is doing all he can. It was a really important win. But for Elche, full team without a win now. And I think this comes on the back of me many podcasts ago saying how impressive they were and what a good style of play they had and how well the manager was doing. And before you know it, you look in and week after week, they're suffering, not getting picking up the wins, and it's now 14 without a win. So that's worrying for Elche. Brought in loads of new players in the summer. Started brightly, but as you can see, they run a form there. One draw in the last five, 14 without a win. It's going to be tough for them to survive, even if they do bring in some new players during the transfer window. So there needs to be a change of fortune there for Elche. But for Valencia, vitally important, they picked up 3 points. Those type of games, it's a different Valencia we're talking about. We're not talking about, you said about Betis, if they win, they're going to the Europa League. That's par, standard. Mm-hmm. We expect that. Normally, we expect that from Valencia and even higher, you know. So this season, it's all about avoiding a disaster in terms of getting dragged into a relegation battle. They're not equipped to deal with it, if I'm being honest. If they get dragged into a relegation dogfight.
Yeah. Can you see much movement in the transfer window? There's obviously not much time for that to happen. Papu Gomez has gone to Sevilla. I see Domingos Quina, who's actually a really, really talented player, but hardly ever gets a kick at Watford. He's gone to Granada. Not a lot. That sort of... You can see more of that kind of a couple of loans here or there, couldn't you? But there's no one spending tens of millions, are they now?
No, I saw Sempanić, is it? He was on the bench for Cadiz. He's an Atletico Madrid striker that hasn't been given an opportunity. With Dembele coming in, he's not going to get one, so he's moved out on loan. No, but it sometimes they just go under the radar, don't they? You don't get to even read about these. It's not a massive issue in La Liga.
No.
So I'm pretty sure there isn't the transfer window, you know, 24-hour news coverage. So you have to look closely. You have to really dig deep to find out until after the window closes. Then you get a list of all the players that have moved. But I don't imagine, you know, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid doing any more business. Don't imagine anyone going to be allowed to leave at this stage.
It's going to take some work to fill those transfer window specials tonight, isn't it? And the on British TV. It's a good look. Long, long, long chat about Jesse Lingard's loan deal to West Ham.
Valencia would be the one I'd keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Just rather than not so much bringing in, I really hope they don't allow anyone else to leave.
Oh, they got Cotroni in, didn't they, on loan? So that's another typical one, isn't it? That's what we're looking at, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, definitely.
We shall see. Anyway, so we are not, even for Patreons, doing a transfer special live this evening. Sorry. But we will be back with something for the Patreons later in the week, and we'll be back with a regular podcast again next week. So thank you very much, Terry, and thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy your football.